ETH is going to fix the money.
I'm like, yo, like, that's a Bitcoin slogan, fix the money, fix the world.
There's not $2 trillion of savings that are politically feasible, even if we could cut the whole government and still have roads.
Bitcoin really is the only truly sound money that we have, and everything else, especially in the altcoin space, is just a bunch of noise. It's just a bunch of junk.
I'm looking forward to Easter weekend because I'm going to be hunting for blocks with my BitAxe.
I can understand the crypto bros hating on Gary. I think he was problematic to what they wanted to push. Brad, I'm curious if you're going to simp for Gary the way that Rick seems.
I'm gonna do my best to tone down the simping.
Good.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. As usual, I have Rick. We were having some technical issues with Tony, so we have one of our self-custody consultants, Mr. Brad Long, joining us today. Excited to have you, Brad. Welcome to to Bitcoin Banter. Let's get into this, guys. Alrighty, Ethereum is down 74% against Bitcoin since switching from proof of work to proof of stake in 2022. No surprise to me, a surprise to many in the shitcoin space, though. Rick, I'll let you take this one first. Man, it's gotta be tough being an Ethereum these days.
Yeah, does anyone remember the flippening? Yeah, I don't think so. Like, that man, that narrative was really, really tiring, right? For a long time, the ETH heads were just banging on so much about when Ethereum would finally overtake Bitcoin and be worth more. I even saw a clip on Twitter the other day of, do you remember that guy, Mike? I think it was Mike Novogratz. You know, the guy who got the Luna tattoo? Wow. I mean, this guy loves making mistakes, right? Because that tattoo is embarrassing. But I saw a clip of him recently saying he thinks like Ethereum will outperform Bitcoin in the bull run based solely on the reason that it's underperformed so far. So, you know, all these talking heads and gurus that people go to listen to figure out where they should place their next bet, like, man, they are just guessing. They have no idea. If your investment thesis is it must go up because it's gone down so much, I'm not sure you should be giving anyone any financial advice. And it's pretty tragic because they suck a lot of people into this. I mean, I'm just looking at an ETH-BTC chart. Oh, no, sorry, an ETH-USD chart now. And believe it or not, if you'd have bought Ethereum in January 2021, so we're talking like, you know, good, more than 4 years ago, then you've just broken even, right? So you've held ETH for 4 years, and we know that the fiat money supply expands, what, on average 15% a year? So actually, if you're holding ETH, like, you're losing money fast. And here's the crazy thing. A lot of these ETH heads will have taken some ETH, then bought an NFT, and that NFT is now down 70% in ETH, which is down 74% against Bitcoin, and it's flat against the dollar. I mean, you're better off setting fire to your money than going anywhere near ETH. And the constant narrative changes, you know, over the last 10 years, we started, it was meant to be the world computer, and then it was something else. And then they had the merge and the splurge and the purge and God knows whatever nonsense they came up with next, and nothing could save it, right? I mean, they called it ultrasound money. It clearly isn't. And anyone going near this, I think ETH is in big trouble, actually. I think this thing is going straight to zero because its main use case was launching shitcoins. But now you can do that on Sol, you can do that on all sorts of other crazy shitcoin networks. So Ethereum doesn't really have that draw in that use case anymore. And just last week, I saw Ethereum Foundation, you can tell their marketing department's running out of ideas because they posted just last week something like ETH is going to fix the money. I'm like, yo, like, that's a Bitcoin slogan, fix the money, fix the world. And well, I guess maybe they're right. They do need to fix their money because it's clearly disastrously broken. So that's all I've really got to say about ETH. It's an absolute joke of a coin. Don't go anywhere near it.
Yeah. Brad, you are something of a Bitcoin OG, class of 2013. I know you went through something of a shitcoin phase. So you've seen this demise in like slow motion. What do you think about what's going on with ETH?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the same as it always has been. I think that, you know, a lot of these altcoins are always, they're an on-ramp for people into the space. And they, in some ways, were probably for all of us, you know, on this call. And it's just difficult to watch. It's difficult to watch, especially when you've been in the space for a while, because you know that ultimately it's a rug pull. Every single one of them is a rug pull. And so it's just, it's difficult to watch having, you know, been through that phase myself and have watched so many people go through. And the sad part is that it'll probably go on for a while because there are always new, you know, we're so early. Anybody that's watching this is so early into Bitcoin that, you know, there is definitely still going to be a whole slew of people that are going to be attracted by, you know, kind of that unit bias. Well, you know, Ethereum is, it's a lower price than Bitcoin. And so I can get into it. And it's going, they're saying that it's going to go up to this number. And it's just that all that number go up, you know, stuff that, that we all have to deal with, you know, talking to the public, you know, talking to, you know, trying to influence people in our lives that, you know, Bitcoin is really the only thing. So yeah, I agree with what Rick is saying. It's just another, you know, leg in this race to zero for Ethereum. And it's sad to watch. And so I know a lot of people that watch, you know, this podcast are, you know, kind of in the Bitcoin only camp, but hopefully this solidifies you, this kind of news just solidifies you even, even further into that. So it's, yeah, it's hard to watch. It's like a slow motion train wreck.
Yeah.
That just seems to never end.
Yeah. I'll put an asterisk by sad to watch. It's sad to watch for the people who haven't figured it out, but it's good to see that we're beginning a cleanse of some of this stuff. I agree with you though, Brad. I think there's going to be a lot more of this. And I think it is a function of how early we are in Bitcoin and how relatively low adoption is on a global scale. I have a friend who, I mean, he doesn't have a lot of money to put in to set aside for savings anyway, but he knows I'm into Bitcoin. And he asked me a few months ago what I thought about XRP. And it wasn't because he thinks XRP, like he was just curious. I guarantee you, he's looking at, hey, I could put $100 into XRP and own X amount of XRP, right? Versus like, that would only buy me 0.0000, you know, whatever Bitcoin.
Right.
And it's like, man, like as long as the unit bias exists, like we really need Bitcoin to win big where it's obvious, like, why would I buy anything else? This is obviously going to be something bigger than just like an investment or whatever. And I think the investment thesis that so many people have is like the big trap of Bitcoin. Sad times for ETH, good times for Bitcoiners, which brings me to our next article or our next point of news. Only 9.6% of Bitcoin addresses are at a loss right now. So this is a pretty healthy signal. My sense and understanding from some of the comments is this isn't necessarily something to be taken, you know, at face value. It's a very hard metric to measure, but it might give us a sense as to where we're at. And it does make sense. You know, the people who bought in at 109, like they're down, but there are a lot of us who have been accumulating for many years, probably a large majority of Bitcoiners. And so, so good time to be a Bitcoiner. We aren't at our all-time highs, but we're strong. So, Brad, I'll let you take this one first. What's sort of the signal this is sending you?
Well, I think it's just the same thing that, you know, I hear you guys talk about all the time, and we can't overstate the fact that, you know, Bitcoin is the fastest horse in the race. It's the only one that's real money. And I hear this all the time. And this is, you know, when I'm orange peeling friends and family and encouraging them to start peeling off some of their savings to put into Bitcoin, you know, because maybe like your friend Michael, maybe they don't have a lot of money, and so they have to be very careful about what they're putting their money into. And so it's that constant encouragement to say, look, everything that you're putting into Bitcoin right now, you don't want to look at the number. You don't want to look at them because everything is about number go up, and all of that narrative that's just so exhausting in the space, right? You want to look at, okay, the four-year cycles, which, you know, obviously there's an argument that we may be past those four-year cycles now, but you want to look at it, you know, 4 to 5 years out. Whatever you're putting in Bitcoin, you don't even want to think about it. You want to keep it there. You want to continue to, you know, diversify out of fiat into Bitcoin. And that just comes along with, you know, conviction. It just comes along with staying close to signal, like what we're putting out, the conversations that we're having with our clients, with our potential clients, you know, the educational materials that we're putting out. So I think it's, yeah, it's just that, it's that conviction that, you know, Bitcoin really is the only truly sound money that we have. And everything else, especially in the altcoin space, is just a bunch of noise. It's just a bunch of junk. And unfortunately, and hopefully you don't have to learn that the hard way like many of us have had to.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. It'll be a fun day when adoption is sufficiently high that things stabilize. Like the purchase, I only like to talk about the price of Bitcoin. There's an exchange rate between Bitcoin and inferior forms of money. And there will be a day that everyone's in the green and is perpetually effectively in the green, you know, maybe small interday dips or whatever, but it just continues its climb. Rick, before I ask you, I just realized you're not wearing a hat, man. Your hair looks great. Looking good. Why don't you give your thoughts now on the topic at hand?
Thanks, man. Yeah, my hairline is performing a lot better than Ethereum. So very, very pleased about that.
Boris.
Yeah. So, all right. Are you throwing me now? But like, yeah, okay. So, what do we say? 10% of Bitcoin hodlers are in profit, apparently, right? And I think it's right to be a little bit skeptical of those numbers. I don't know the maths behind that calculation, but you know, it's probably directionally right because, as you said, Michael, right? How many people were buying at 109K? There'll definitely be a cohort who bought Bitcoin between, you know, what it is now, 85 and 109, and technically they're at a loss. But, you know, look at the Bitcoin chart for the last 10 years and you'd expect most people to be in profit, right? And counter that to what we just saw with Ethereum, which is 74% down against Bitcoin, and you just broke even if you held it for 4 years, and that's breaking even in a currency that is losing value. That's a disaster. But I think you're also right to point out, you know, How interested should we be in how profitable you've been in terms of dollars? You know, loads of people try and make these predictions on where the Bitcoin price is going, but it's a little bit of a fool's errand, because I think when you get to the point when you really understand the purpose of money, you realize what it really is a very good measuring stick for us to be able to appraise and communicate the value of things, right? So if you're trying to communicate the value of Bitcoin by using dollars, you're using a really bad measuring stick, because this measuring stick changes length all the time, depending on, well, it's normally getting shorter and shorter and shorter because they're printing money and it's becoming worth less. The argument I'd make, right, and it's just purely, I'm not saying this is going to happen, it's just purely an example, is how excited would you be about Bitcoin hitting $1 million per coin if a loaf of bread was $1,000? Now you see, like, so you know what its value is in dollars is it's maybe important now, right? We need some sort of benchmark, and okay, you know, in a short window of time, fiat money is more stable in terms of its purchasing power than say Bitcoin is. But over time, more and more people switch onto this idea that Bitcoin is the denominator. Bitcoin is how I should value everything. Like when I look at a new car today that I might like, I don't see a car that's 10 grand. I see a car that's point whatever BTC, right? And if you can move into that world as well, I think you start playing the game a little bit better, because you realize actually the thing that matters most is the little number in your Sparrow wallet that says 0.002 Bitcoin or whatever, right? That's the number you're trying to increase. And okay, that you might have 0.002 Bitcoin and it's worth, I don't know, $500 one day and $300 the other. That's the distraction. That's using the wrong measuring stick and you feel like you're losing money. But Bitcoin is the money. So if that number, the 0.002, if that number is increasing, that's the game you should be playing, because that's the scoreboard. That's the scoreboard that we're all going to look at when all of this is said and done, right? And Bitcoin has become the money of the world. No one's going to care. Dollars will be irrelevant. So the only measuring stick, the only measure of your success will be that number of Bitcoin or Satoshis that you've collected. So interesting, definitely showcases that, you know, if you're buying Bitcoin, you're probably doing better than holding dollars and holding ETH and everything else. But also, like, try and go that step further. Try and realize that the only thing you really should be worrying about in the long term over the next 5-10 years is that number of BTC that you have.
Yeah, I think a more useful metric is something like for a longer duration than dollars will be is something like gold, but even something beyond that, something like oil, like how much oil, you know, like a useful commodity that's, you know, going to stand the test of time. Because even something like gold has the, it's not pure monetary premium and it's not going to be the money that we're measuring in, you know, 10 years from now. Alrighty, up next, we've got Pierre Richard, tweeted at Brian Armstrong, this is terrible for the industry. So what he's referring to is this tweet says Coinbase, fresh off the SEC dropping its case against it, decides to boldly parlay that win into launching its own Base token from the official account. Naturally, it immediately rugged it. And we see a nice red candle on this chart. And so I candidly didn't have a chance to look deeply into Base, nor do I care. I mean, I think you lose brain cells if you focus too much on some of this stuff. But my sense, Rick, after talking with you, is it sounds like Base is like sort of a Sol type network or something like that. You can launch your coins and everything. And it didn't take long for them to get cocky and launch a new coin on Coinbase. I'll let you take this one first, Rick.
Yeah, well, listen, it's all the rage now, isn't it? Like, Donald Trump's at it, Melania Trump's at it, Javier Milei is at it. Like, let's just rug everyone. Who cares? It's crime season, right? We've had alt season before, and there was a fair amount of criminality in that, but this is straight up crime season now. And look, I mean, I feel a bit silly now because, like, last week we were absolutely panning Brian Armstrong, and I can't come on every single episode and start ragging on this guy. But he kind of deserves it, man. This is criminality in my mind and just totally unacceptable. I mean, like you, Michael, right? I've not done a lot of research into the Base network. I don't really know what it's for, what it does. Well, no, that's not true. I don't know what it does, but I do know what it's for. It's for stealing money from people by launching shitcoins. I think it's probably a similar thing to ETH, right? A network where you can launch rubbish. I don't know the full story behind this, but it sounds like Coinbase actually launched their own coin on Base. So this, I don't know how big Coinbase is, but like $1 billion company, right? Easily. And they're launching this rubbish and rug pulling their own customers. I mean, anyone who's leaving any money on Coinbase now, it's is a Stockholm syndrome or something. Like you're in the house with the abuser and he's got your money tied up and you're staying there when you could just leave the front door. So yeah, another one for Lex Luthor. You know, he's ripping everyone off. He's out there committing crimes, and I don't understand how the hell is this company custodying like ETF Bitcoin or Michael Saylor's Bitcoin? So Michael Saylor is custodying Bitcoin with a guy who launches rubbish on Base. Like, make it make sense. It doesn't make any sense. So I don't know what timeline we'll be on, but I'm sure long before I die, Coinbase is going to explode something spectacular, right? And you want to be way, way away from that impact and that blast when it happens.
Brad, I know you're probably stacking some Base tokens. Were you able to sell the top?
That's the funniest thing I've heard all day. I think that phrase that Rick used, Stockholm syndrome, is really like the perfect encapsulation of what we deal with as Bitcoiners, what we deal with as a business, even sometimes, you know, speaking to clients, speaking to prospects and things like that. It's funny, I hadn't even heard about this whole thing until you just pulled that slide up with that tweet in it. Because everything else besides Bitcoin in my world is just noise. And there's like everything that is not Bitcoin automatically sort of fits into this category that, okay, it's a rug pull. It's just a matter of how and when and who's going to get hurt. And the sad thing is that, you know, to most of the people that are just getting, you know, you can understand because there are so many levels of Stockholm syndrome in our society, right? Fiat is Stockholm syndrome, and the vast majority of the population has been, you know, held captive and abused by this system so much so that they don't even question it. They don't even know to think about, like, okay, well, what do you mean by inflation? What do you mean by, the increase of the monetary supply? And that's why these prices are going up. It's the same thing. And so I really, you know, want to continue to lean into what we're doing here in terms of having these conversations and putting some more teeth into the argument that, you know, Bitcoin is really the, and if I've heard this argument, maybe it was Michael Saylor, you know, you spend 40,000 hours learning how to specialize in something to become a professional. You can spend 10 hours to try to start to understand what Bitcoin is. And we've got, you guys have written many blog posts. We've got lots of signal out there around this. And our passion in this space, our heart's desire is for you to not get rug pulled. First of all, by fiat, because we've all been rug pulled our whole lives by fiat. But also by all of these new, and there's going to be another one tomorrow, the next week. There's going to be another token, and that's all it is. It's a token. It's an art to play an arcade game. It's ridiculous. So yeah. So I think it's just this sense of like, it's draining. It's exhausting. To watch people, you know, just willfully going into these things out of just sheer ignorance. And so, yeah, so I guess the message is always, you know, the message that you guys are always going to hear from us is, you know, Bitcoin only if it's, you know, a new thing, or, you know, it's unit bias. It's that natural greed that we all have. We all want to be wealthy. We all want to, you know, give less of our time to the man and all of that stuff. Understand that. But Bitcoin is the only truly scarce asset, and it's worth you spending, you know, 10, 20, 100 hours, you know, understanding what it is at a protocol level, at a monetary level, all of its attributes. You know, it's kind of like looking at an elephant through a magnifying glass. I heard somebody say, I didn't make that up. I steal all of my material. You know, it's like you can look at it as a unit of account, and maybe that's the ears. You can look at it as in a medium of exchange, and maybe that's the feet. But you always have to back out and look at, okay, there's still an aspect of this. It's almost inexhaustible. You know, I mean, I've been in this space for, you know, more than 10 years, and I'm learning new stuff from you guys like all the time. So, you know, if you don't hear anything from, if you don't take anything else away from these banter conversations, like spend your time on Bitcoin. Like if you're tempted away, like just do whatever you can to like, you know, like cut your finger off, like make it painful and just, you know, take the time and study Bitcoin and study self-custody in addition to that.
Yeah, Brad, spot on. I think the fact that you just learned about this story from us is a luxury that you have, because I noticed I can pinpoint exactly where my mental health peaked, and it was the day before we started recording our first Bitcoin banter, because now I have to keep up with all this nonsense. Like clown world has become a much more acute issue that I'm aware of, you know, than I ever would have known before. So, I think enjoy the Bitcoin only ride. We've got to dump on some of these other shit coins. Alrighty, up next we've got, let's see here, ex-SEC chair Gary Gensler just revealed he is a Bitcoin maxi. Let's watch this video.
Bitcoin in with the rest of them, or do you think Bitcoin is different than, is qualitatively different than the others?
I think there's the distinction is similar to in metals. There's only two or three precious metals. We humans have a certain fascination with two or three precious metals like gold. I don't think we humans will have a fascination with 10 or 15,000 meme or sentiment tokens trading over the years.
Alrighty, so. I think calling him a Bitcoin maxi based on this is maybe a stretch. He compares the sort of the cryptocurrency markets to precious metals, and there are only a few that people really care about. Certainly not 10,000. Rick, I'm gonna let you take this first, because when we were kind of prepping offline and everything, you made an interesting point about maybe Gary Gensler wasn't quite the villain that many thought he was. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Maybe you can reframe it if that's necessary. I don't want to get you canceled. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, he works in a sort of governmental department, right? So you have to be a criminal to even apply for those positions. But maybe we gave him more of a hard time than we should have. And what I mean by that is, you know, I think a lot of people got frustrated with Gary because they felt like he was, quote unquote, killing and attacking the crypto industry. And so that sort of built like into this big thing, like everyone thought, you know, and they maybe tied him in with Elizabeth Warren and some of the other sort of anti-crypto people from the Biden administration. And he got wrapped up with all that. But I don't know, I'm going to cut him a little bit of slack here because, you know, his job at the SEC was to make sure that financial scams weren't just proliferating everywhere, right? And okay, you know, like the rest of them, maybe he, you know, bunched Bitcoin into that group and did so incorrectly. But I agree with Gary on quite a few things about all the other tokens other than Bitcoin, so cryptos. Because the Howey test is what you apply to financial instruments to decide whether or not they class as securities. And look, I can't remember them off the top of my head, but it's things like, you know, is there joint enterprise here? Are you expecting a profit? Are they marketing this product on your behalf and promoting it? And all these sorts of things, like, does it constitute an investment offered to you by a third party with some sort of promise of you making money out of the other end? And I think all centralized tokens created by, you know, a group of insiders with a marketing team that go to market and raise money like all day long, I think there's no debate from me. I think they're securities. And I think they should be treated as such. And most of that, well, look at what we've had, Hawk Tour, Trump, Melania, like the whole thing. That's what the SEC is there to stop. And since we've sort of walked back the SEC's involvement, you know, I was never scared of the SEC when it came to Bitcoin. I guess that's why I was never so angry about them, because you talk about the crypto industry. Bitcoin isn't an industry. It's money. So, you know, the SEC weren't going to regulate Bitcoin because, well, how? What were they going to do? There's nothing you can do to stop Bitcoin. So I wasn't really particularly bothered or that interested in Gary coming in and making life hard for the other cryptos. In fact, you know, I'm probably in favor of that because I think they're all scams and they're ripping off investors. So it's quite interesting now to come and see this video and you know, I don't think he's all the way there. I agree with you. I don't think he's a Bitcoin maximalist like the tweet claims, because he says, oh, you know, there might be a handful of precious metals, which suggests maybe he thinks like Bitcoin and ETH and one other, right? So he's like, doesn't like the dog coins, right? Maybe. And he's maybe going on the right direction to Bitcoin only. But I think he always understood that most of the stuff out there is just complete vaporware and he was trying to stop it. So yeah, maybe Gary Gensler maybe we'll get him on the show, man. Like, you know, maybe he's the next big Bitcoin proponent. Who knows? But I think everyone panned him so hard and I think he was just trying to do his job. And yeah, he doesn't understand Bitcoin and yeah, he probably said some stupid stuff about it, but almost everyone has.
Yeah, I can understand the crypto bros hating on Gary. I think he was problematic to what they wanted to push. Brad, I'm curious if you're going to simp for Gary the way that Rick seems.
Yeah, I'm gonna do my best to tone down the simping.
Okay, you know, good.
We're done. It's funny. I remember last year, 2024, at the Bitcoin conference, which was actually my first Bitcoin conference that I ever went to. I remember when Trump got on stage and he mentioned something about Gary Gensler, and there was just this tsunami of boos that came from the audience. And I think that it's really kind of emblematic of what, you know, what you guys are really talking about in terms of, yeah, you know, his job at the SEC was definitely to curb some of these scams. And so it's just, there's so much nuance in this space, right? And I would say that, you know, he's definitely somebody that I don't really pay that much attention to, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, Bitcoin's the ultimate honey badger. It doesn't really care about any of this. You know, we're on this slow sort of warlike posture footing, you know, just trying to, you know, win hearts and minds for, you know, the Bitcoin protocol, one person, one mind, one set of problems at a time. And so really, at the end of the day, in my mind, you know, and I guess I kind of think about these things simplistically since I'm not really engaged in Bitcoin Twitter. And so I think I'm kind of insulated from a lot of this stuff and not necessarily aware of, like, you know, the nuances of the arguments that are going on. But, you know, I look at somebody like that and I'm like, is anybody even going to really remember his name in 10 years or 15 years? You know, it's like he's just another, you know, government stooge, in my opinion, that is going to be very, very soon forgotten, just like politicians from 10 to 20 years ago that are long, long since dead. Nobody even remembers who they are or what they did. And so, yeah, it's an interesting, it's an interesting thing to sort of pay attention to. Maybe I need to spend a little bit more time paying attention to it, but man, I'm kind of happy not. It's kind of nice to get my dose, my fair dose of the toxicity of Bitcoin Twitter just by watching you guys, you know, sort of comment on it. So
yeah, man, don't waste your time. You're living the good life. Rick and I are aging quickly. Alrighty, last story for you, and I've got one final update at the end here. Eggs are so expensive that some Americans are decorating potatoes this Easter. Brad, I'm gonna let you just, no question, just take it.
Is that a serious article, or is that like from The Onion or something?
No. This is real. You start commenting on it. I'm gonna pull this.
Okay.
Out.
Yeah, I mean, it is. In some ways, I mean, I went to the grocery store a couple of days ago. I saw the price of eggs, and I was like, wow, man, like this is off the charts. So I would imagine, you know, coming from sort of a financial coaching background and a lot of the clients that I've had over the years, it doesn't surprise me that people are so, you know, hard up for cash that, you know, they're having to find a substitute. But the idea that it would be potatoes is just, it's hilarious and sad.
Yeah. It's, so I pulled it up. There's, I mean, 8 articles all about this. And it's fun to close with like a funny story. And on one hand it is, I don't know what to say, but
me neither.
It's really sad though, that a highly nutritious, I mean, very nutrient dense food that's been a staple of the American diet for a long time is becoming so difficult that you can't even just afford it for one day is like a fun thing that, you know, many people partake in. And it, you know, Rick, you offline, I think you and I go back and forth on, you know, you rag on Americans for our dietary choices and that. But in our defense, it's also becoming much harder to eat healthy. And I can, as someone who looks for, you know, grass-fed beef and organic fruit and those sorts of things, even just the cheapest eggs out there right now are just unaffordable for most people if they're not going to actually eat them. Rick, what's your take?
Yeah, well, I mean, here's the thing. If you're trying to save money, I don't understand why you're painting potatoes. That makes no sense, right? Someone needs to tell these people, you can paint an egg, right? And then you can still crack it and eat it, right? Because you painted the shells, right? So I'd first of all, maybe these people are having money issues slightly because like their approach to problem solving is, let's say, interesting. And I mean, look, I take it as a personal affront here. I'm an Irishman, right? You can't be messing with the potatoes. I stop it. That's the reason we left Ireland in the first place, is because we ran out of tatties. And we came over to America because you guys had some. So don't be painting them. The other
tatties,
thing, like maybe.
Is that what you call them?
Yeah, tatties. Well, that's more Scottish, really. Yeah. But yeah. Like, and maybe invest in a chicken, right? That's another way to go about it. Another top tip, like, I'm a bit of a weird guy, which I know, Michael, you already know very well.
Shocking.
But look, I mean, I generally try and get free food whenever I can. So where I live in the summer, I can go out and I pull lobsters out from under the rocks or sometimes go diving for them. The current season right now is wild garlic season. It's just literally food on the ground. You just pick it up. It's absolutely beautiful wild garlic. And I don't love the excuse that it costs too much to eat healthy, right? Because I see what people eat. I've said this on the show before, right? Like, I can go and get a nice duck fillet, make some dauphinoise potatoes, you know, a little red wine jus and some nice vegetables. And I can get that done for £5 or £6 a plate, right? But if you go to Uber Eats and order a burger from McDonald's, by the time it gets you, it's $20. So, you know, I take an issue with people saying, oh, like the food thing is a problem, right? Because it's like, I actually think you can live cheaper if you eat healthy, but that's by the by. But yeah, no, a real shame that people are having to resort to that. I'm looking forward to Easter weekend because I'm going to be hunting for blocks with my bit axe and I'm going to be hunting for eggs in my garden, right? You got to look out for those Easter eggs. But yeah, I clown world again, right? We're painting potatoes. I don't know where we go from here.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I got to take issue. Like, I hear you. There are ways that you can... Like where I live, I can't walk out into the woods. I mean, I can go hunting, like that's a cost effective way. But for people who aren't equipped to do that, you know, if I want to buy, even if I wanted to buy like a whole cow and, you know, get it cheap, which is inconvenient for me because there are a lot of cuts I don't care about. So I'm like, you know, you're probably looking at, I don't know, depending on where you are, $8 to $12 a pound still. I think I've seen like, you know, 10 for like a grass fed cow. If you want to just buy the cheapest cut of, you know, ground beef or something like that, like you can get that in some places for $4 or $5 a pound. And, but it's not grass fed finished, you know, they're probably highly vaccinated cows, like that sort of thing. I think in general, if you're just going to the grocery store, if you're trying to buy the most nutritious stuff, it is going to be, you know, 25 to 75% more, maybe double. But I hear your point. I think a lot of people aren't creative enough. And good point, hard boil the eggs and then eat them after you're done decorating them. Just make sure you don't get a bunch of the dye and stuff, you know, seeping onto the whites. Alrighty, so I wanted to give one quick update. Hang on, let me pull it up here. Because I've talked about this a lot on the show. So your Doge dividend check has been revised down from $5,000 to $375. I don't know if that's actually what they're planning on doing, if they're doing it at all. But Doge Savings, they've cut their outlook, their forecast on savings by effectively 100%, which to me has always, this always seemed likely. There's not $2 trillion of savings that are politically feasible, even if we could cut the whole government and still have roads. So they're looking at, you know, maybe, you know, $1 trillion of savings or something like that. I still don't even think that's going to happen. But Brad, so, I mean, Rick, this doesn't apply to you anyways, because your government isn't trying to save any money. Brad, I think we're out of luck. So I'm going to be resorting to potatoes this Easter, because I was relying on the $5,000 check to buy my eggs. My kids will have to just live with that, I guess.
Yeah.
Alrighty, guys. I think that's it for today. For everyone listening, thank you so much for tuning in. As Brad talked about several times, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We can help you with proper self-custody. If you are lucky enough, you'll get to talk to the man, Brad himself. He can help you get sorted out. We also help with online privacy, privacy phones. We have a Plan B residency option. Again, it's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you're enjoying the show, if you like having Brad on instead of Tony, let us know in the comments. We would love to hear from you. Subscribe to the channel. Do us a favor. We need to feed the algorithm. Let's be honest. That's what we're trying to do. So help us out in that way. And as always, guys, pleasure chatting with you. Brad, good having you on, man. Hope we can do it again.
It was fun.
Awesome.
Don't hurt my feelings, guys.
Thanks, cheers, Michael. Guys.
Thanks.